Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 7, 2017. A renegade general from South Sudan Army has formed a new rebel group.
Guerr is killing our people. Guerr has betrayed the aspirations, the hopes of our people. So it is a must for the people of South Sudan under the National Salvation Front to come out at this historical juncture to see into it that Guerr is not there.
And a South Sudanese analyst says the government should address the country's chronic food shortages.
What needs to happen is that the relief service has to be scaled up. There has to be more support coming from both international institutions as well as our own government to provide relief food as well as increase supplies in the market.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese senior military officer who resigned last month from his position has formed a new rebel group called the National Salvation Front. General Thomas Chirilo Swaka released a statement yesterday saying his group will use all means possible to overthrow President Salva Kiir. In an exclusive interview with South Sudan in Focus, Chirilo called on civilians in various parts of South Sudan to leave the country because he says they are suffering at the hands of the South Sudan Army.
The reason for us to come up with the National Salvation Front Revolution is to rescue our people who are dying today in different places of our country, those who are dying in our bushes, chased by Kiir forces, the militia of the SPLA and Matiang'a Nyor, those who are dying and losing even their dignity in the UN camps, those who are in refuge in different neighboring countries. Guerr is killing our people. Guerr has betrayed the aspirations, the hopes of our people. So it is a must for the people of South Sudan under the National Salvation Front to come out at this historical juncture to see into it that Guerr is not there.
After your declaration, what is next?
We are going to use every means possible to see into it that Guerr is not there, eating out our people. And you remember in my paper, I say our people already are rejecting the rule of Guerr and his clique. They are now leaving the country, going to the bushes, going to the displaced camps, to our rivers. They are hiding in our mountains. They are outside in the refugee camps. And at this juncture, I'm calling to all our people to leave our nation. There is no place for them really to live as people in the country, in South Sudan. As we talk, our people in Bahr Ghazal, our people in Upper Nile, our people in Equatoria are really suffering seriously. They're being divided. They're being made to kill themselves. They're being made to hate themselves. There is no nation at the moment. We need to move as soon as possible, and we need to rescue our people.
General Thomas, you are saying that you want to bring change by all means. Can you be specific? Are you going to fight the government in Juba? What are you going to do?
In a revolution, in a Marxist revolution, use every means. We'll use every means possible. And there's a lot of means, of course, and we are going to use them.
Some people are already speculating that you don't have an army, that you have just released this statement, you don't have an army, you are just by yourself, and it's not going to be possible for you to achieve the objectives that you have put forward in your paper. How do you react to that?
I think my army is our people who love peace. My army is our people who love to be together, who love to be in unity. More than 90% of our people, other than Kiir and his clique and his militia army of the SPLA, which is already turned to be a militia, our great army of the SPLA, which is already came to be a militia army, to be a tribal army, to be Matiang'a Nyor, we are the majority of our country. The people who love peace in our country are the majority. And this is my army. And they're going to march. They'll be marching. The way they're leaving our country is an indication that they don't want to be ruled by Kiir.
You sound like you're not happy with President Salva Kiir. Do you have any personal problem with President Salva Kiir?
How can you be happy if somebody who claimed to be a revolutionary, who claimed to be a rescuer of our people, at the end of the day, he betrayed our people? I cannot be happy with Kiir. He betrayed our people, and he's now an enemy of our people.
In your paper, you mentioned the Jiang Council of Elders as one of the cause of the problems in South Sudan, and the Jiang a big community in South Sudan. And at the same time, you're calling on South Sudanese to join you. Do you think you will be getting support of the Jiang people?
Our great people of Jiang are very innocent of what Kiri is doing with Jiang Council of Elders. You cannot imagine how our people, the Jiang people, the great people of Jiang, are suffering in South Sudan. They are now being victimized by their own brothers and sisters just because they are from Kirk clan or Kirk tribe. And I call all our people, the Jiang people, all of them, to join hands with their own brothers and sisters in Apanale in Equatoria and in Bargazal to see to it that Kirk is not there.
How many people are with you in the National Salvation Front?
We are very many inside and outside the country. If you remember, even this very SPLA, which is already destroyed by Salva Kiir, this is a very great army, and you have nationalistic officers and social men who are outside the country and who are still captive under Kiir. Anytime they'll be joining hands together and we'll be fighting.
When you say many, many is relative. How many are we talking about?
Remember how SPLA, the number of the SPLA was before when we are fighting the war during the 21 years. We are thousands, John. We are very many, we are thousands. Leave alone now the masses, our youth, men and women who are now dashing to the bushes of South Sudan to struggle so that they become free people.
You are declaring your organization at a time where you have the SPLM in opposition. You have Lama Calls National Democratic Movement. And you have other actors. Even the former governor of Western Equatoria also declared his political party here in the United States. Are you working with these groups?
John, I respect these people. I respect all our people in opposition, be that the IO, be that my brother Bakasiro, be that our elder, Dr. Lama Kol, and the rest. I respect them highly because they decided to show the world that Kiir is destroying our country, and therefore we need to stand up. They're showing our people, they're telling our people really to stand up so that they struggle for their liberty. I respect them. And I hope that in the coming future, we'll all be together so that we move and really rescue our people.
That's General Thomas Chirilo Swaka, former Deputy Chief of Staff for South Sudan Army. He was speaking to me from an undisclosed location yesterday. A researcher with the SAD Institute says South Sudan government should subsidize food imports and regulate market prices as immediate measures to curb widespread food insecurity and minimize famine. A humanitarian affairs ministry official says the government is aware of food shortages in two areas of the country and is urging donors to provide more assistance. Waki Simon Wudu has the details for VOA from Juba.
Agustino Tengmayai, a researcher with the Juba-based think tank, says conflict, poverty, and the economic crisis are causing more food shortages. He believes providing subsidies and regulating food prices are short-term measures that could help address food insecurity in South Sudan. Mayai says he conducted research in the former Warap and northern Bahr el-Ghazal states in January.
Some households do not have even a single goat or an income to support their livelihood. You're now getting prices going up all over the place, and so you are faced with an increasing inflation on a regular basis, but don't have the resources to meet that. And so you find people moving to North Sudan instead of staying.
The Sud Institute's report follows the UN's recent declaration of famine in parts of former Unity State. Mayai says people are already dying in the two areas because they have nothing to eat. He blames unemployment, climatic changes, and poverty for the worsening food insecurity in those regions. Mayai says many residents are too hungry to even farm the land to produce their own food. Mayai says the Sud Institute's researchers also found that civil service employees are not being paid promptly.
People that we met who are employed by the state stated that they would go for months and months since 2012 without being paid. And as a result, their children are malnourished. They have pretty little to support their families. And so this is our two shocks, but also the devaluation that occurred in 2015 has also added to the problem.
Mayai says the government's decision to devalue the local currency in 2015 only worsened food shortages because many South Sudanese could no longer afford to buy food. Mayai recommends that the government takes immediate measures to address the situation.
What needs to happen is that the relief service has to be scaled up. There has to be more support coming from both international institutions as well as our own government to provide relief food as well as increase supplies in the market. Because what we saw in the two states is that you find relief services not being enough for people.
Gadwech Peter Kulang, Undersecretary in South Sudan's Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management Ministry, agrees with the Soot Institute's findings.
I would say their finding is in place, and we have shared this one earlier, even before the Soot Institute present their reports to us. We have shared it with our partners that there is a need for increased assistance in the greater Bargazal area.
Mayai says, above all, the government must restore peace and stability as a long-term remedy to the problem of persistent food insecurity across South Sudan. Wake Simon Udo, VOA News, Juba.
Nearly 1,000 students at a UN Protection of Civilians site in Juba missed South Sudan secondary school leaving examinations, which began yesterday in many parts of the country. Government officials cited security concerns for not delivering examinations to the POC site and say students should sit for exams outside the POC, something students and teachers and parents unanimously rejected. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
Deng Deng Hok, South Sudan's General Education Minister, rings a bell marking the commencement of secondary school final examinations at Chinese Senior Secondary School in Juba. Some 19,000 students took the final secondary school examinations across the country yesterday. Education officials say the government delayed the examination for 2 months because of financial constraints, including a lack of money to print the exam papers. Hundreds of students at a Juba POC site held a peaceful protest yesterday over the government's decision preventing them from sitting for their examinations. A total of 965 students who live in the POC site were unable to take their final examinations. Gadwong Yak, head teacher at Mat Senior Secondary School in the UN camp, says education ministry officials informed him they would not send examination supervisors to the school this week because of security. Concerns.
I'm not feel happy at all for what has taken place, actually, because it damaged the future of those students. Now all the students, they are here as I'm talking to you, they're with me, within the school. We were waiting for the examination, seeing yesterday the examination delivered to us. We prepared the centers, and the index number for the school are already within the center here.
Yak says this is the first time in 3 years students at the camp have been prevented from taking their examinations. South Sudan National Examinations Council officials discussed the matter in Juba this week. Lul Rai Dol, secretary of the National Examinations Council, says there was miscommunication between the school and examinations officials. Dol says the students will likely sit for their examination outside the POC in the near future, and it will happen at Bullock Primary School in Juba.
They meet one paper and they will be out to come and sit. The whole exam remains. We are the solution now, doing the solution of it.
School officials told South Sudan in Focus today that government officials are recommending the students sit for their exams at Bulk A Primary Schools. About 70 of the nearly 1,000 students at the POC camp sat for examinations today. But most students and teachers at the UN Protection of Civilians site reject the recommendation, saying they will not step outside the UN camp. 19-year-old Nyakim Wiyul has studied at the UN camp for the past 3 years. Wiyul says she does not understand why education officials do not want the IDPs to take the examinations at the UN camp when that has been the case for the past 3 years. She says she will not take her exams at Buluk A Primary School as suggested by government officials because she feels unsafe outside of the POC.
No. We don't really accept that because it's actually insecure. We are inside here because that side is not really safe. It's not really safe for us. Even if they allow us to sit for the exams, something will occur later. They may take the boys and then mistreat the girls or make them, maybe rape them or do any sort of bad things to them.
24-year-old Buey Wichuan is another student who missed his examinations yesterday and today. Wichuan says he feels isolated in his own country and asks the government to ensure that students at the POC can sit for their final examinations. He says he has not left the camp since seeking refuge there when fighting broke out in 2013 and still feels it is too dangerous to leave the camp now.
I felt broken since the time I heard that people are going to do the examination outside because I've been studying for the whole year in order to get it done right, but unfortunately I was surprised that that exam will take place outside. Well, I don't have access to go there because of my security. I feel like I'm isolated from my state or my national, whereby I can't be allowed to sit.
There are two senior secondary schools at the UN Protection of Civilians Site 3. Some students were sitting quietly at the compound yesterday, looking extremely disappointed. A man in the POC camp who prefers to be identified only as Jackson says the community must not force the students to take the examinations outside of the UN camp.
We can convene these children when they're still alive. They are very important for our daily life. We don't want to lose them again. Like 15 December 2013, we lost a very important children. The same children you see, their brothers have been killed in 15 December 2013. We cannot give them the word encouragement. They should have to leave the POC while they are being secured by the United Nations Army. Because why we are here? Because in Juba, we were not secure.
Community leaders say the students are at UN POC camp for their own safety, and it would be impossible for them to sit outside the protection of civilian sites in Juba. They are pleading with the international community to intervene and provide national examinations for students at POC camps sometimes this month. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan signs an agreement with oil company from Nigeria. We'll bring in details after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what has been your biggest challenge?
I work in a corporate organization and I have 4 kids. My biggest challenge is, leaving them and getting a good person to take care of them. This has really been my biggest challenge.
I'm heartbroken. I don't know how to defend myself. Like, if I'm annoyed, I always cry. I cannot speak out what pains me. Instead, I keep it inside.
During my childhood, I was raised with my mother alone, without my father. So I had that challenge of having two parents together at the same time, to have that parenthood living where your father is here, your mother is here. So that life really disturbed me a lot.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today we are talking about a disfiguring disease. About 2 million people a year contract leishmaniasis, which can cause disfiguring skin ulcers. It is considered a neglected tropical disease, so it is difficult to find investment for new therapies. But University of Pennsylvania researchers say the key to new treatment may be found in the body's immune system. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The World Health Organization says leishmaniasis affects some of the world's poorest people. It's caused by parasites transmitted by more than 90 species of sandflies. The WHO says the disease is linked to urbanization, deforestation, and the construction of dams and irrigation systems. Skin ulcers can last for months or years and can cause major tissue damage in some cases. Internal organs, mainly the spleen, liver, and bone marrow, can also be affected by one of three types of the disease. The study's senior author is Philip Scott, professor of immunology at the University of Pennsylvania. He began researching the Leishmania parasite in Brazil 30 years ago. Scott found the parasite fascinating because it lived in human immune cells called macrophages, which should have killed it.
These are the cells that you would think would be eating things like bacteria and fungi and protozoa to kill them. But this particular parasite, like other pathogens such as leprosy or TB, lives inside macrophages and is not killed.
Scott and his colleagues began to focus on the immune system's T cells, which release molecules that activate the macrophages. But some T cells actually made things worse.
In patients, we saw a lot of T cells that were associated with increased damage and increased pathology. And so it was really looking at the patients and what was happening in the patient that led us to focus on this particular type of T cell.
Scott says these T cells attack infected cells, but the results can be less than perfect.
These T cells are cytolytic T cells, so they kill infected targets, they kill infected macrophages, these cells that the parasites are living in. But unfortunately, instead of killing the parasite just escapes and infects other macrophages. And so what happens is you have a lot of cell death that's occurring in the skin, and that leads to inflammation. And what we've been tracking down over the last year or 2 years is really what the mechanisms by which that inflammation occurs.
While inflammation is the body's natural response to infection, for a person with leishmaniasis, it can make symptoms, such as skin ulcers, worse. So researchers say the skin damage may have less to do with the parasite and more to do with an immune system out of control. Researchers have identified the pathway that leads to inflammation. Scott says they may have found a way to block it, and the means to do it may already exist or be in development.
We know that actually it's a pathway that occurs in other situations where there are drugs that are being developed. So, for example, would be rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, those inflammatory type of diseases. And the wonderful thing right now is there's a variety of drugs being designed for what are, you might consider, first world diseases that may be applicable to this particular neglected disease.
Scott explains what he calls the researcher's hope and hypothesis.
The idea is that we would treat with these drugs that block that inflammatory response, and hence the patients would resolve their disease much quicker.
Several expensive anti-inflammatory drugs are being considered for use in a small clinical trial. One advantage is that these drugs have already been tested for safety, but it may still take about a year to get the trial up and running. The goal is to find cheaper drugs that do the same thing. There are a few unanswered questions. Some people do not show any symptoms when infected with the Leishmania parasite. Scott says they don't know why yet. Could this hypothesis be applied to all three types of the disease? That's not clear. The first clinical trial would focus on the one causing skin ulcers. And what happens to those parasites that escape when the T cells destroy the macrophages? They have an answer for that one. Professor Scott says, as part of their trial, researchers would combine an anti-inflammatory drug with a known antiparasitic medication. So maybe the disease could be treated with far fewer skin ulcers. Scott says there's even a chance that once inflammation is under control, the antiparasitic drug would not be needed. The immune system would no longer be out of control and better able to kill the parasites. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The South Sudan government and the Nigerian Petroleum Company have signed a six-year agreement in Juba yesterday that allows the company to search for oil in former Jonglei, Lakes, and Central Equatorial States. South Sudan's oil minister says the government welcomes new investors, as we hear from Michael Atit in Juba.
Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lol Garquath, who signed the agreement on behalf of the government with Oronto Company Executive, says Juba is trying to strengthen the petroleum industry by creating a friendly environment for international oil and gas companies in South Sudan.
What we have just signed is an exploration, production, sharing agreement for Block B3, or former Jonglei State, Lake State, former Lake State, and then former Central Equatoria State. This block is awarded today to Oranto Petroleum Limited.
Under the agreement, Oranto will be a technical operator and will be a 90% shareholder of the block. South Sudan state-owned petroleum corporation, NILPET, will hold a 10% stake. Minister Garquat says he believes South Sudan has small oil fields to be discovered and developed if companies like Oranto invest and work in the country.
We believe that the petroleum resources in Block B3 are vast. To reach our target in this block, we must move quickly to explore and redouble our current oil production.
Garquat says South Sudan can restore its deteriorating economy by opening up oil exploration to more companies like Oranto. Despite reports of repeated clashes between government and rebel forces in Upper Nile State, former Unity State and former Central Equatoria State, Garquat says the government of the National Unity will restore peace across the country so that other investors will feel safe to work in the country.
We are inviting all the investors. Today it is a sign to everybody who wanted to invest in South Sudan that they are welcome. And the door has been opened today by the Oranto Petroleum Limited. It is not about bad stories. It is good stories. Starting from today, we will be talking about why a giant like Oranto Petroleum Limited is here in South Sudan exploring oil. It is a clear sign that peace is here. The people of South Sudan are enjoying it.
Others will argue immense suffering continues across South Sudan. UN aid agencies recently declared localized famine in South Sudan and call it man-made tragedy caused by continued fighting and the devastated economy. Prince Arthur Eze, the founder and the chairman of Oranto Petroleum, says his company is committed to partnering with South Sudan. He says Oranto will implement the first phase of the oil agreement immediately.
The contract called the first phase 3 years, and the second phase 3 years. We start to now to gather the data and process the data, interpret it, then we plan for where to drill.
As I says, the company's $500 million investment in South Sudan will create more jobs for South Sudanese youth. Atlas Petroleum International and Oranto Petroleum, the two sister companies of Atlas Oranto Group, own and operate 20 oil and gas facilities in 10 African countries, including Benin, Cote d'Ivoire, Equatorial Guinea, Ghana, Liberia, and Namibia. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Marshall. It's a song recorded in a cattle camp in Bahr el Ghazal State. We have been listening to that song by cattle keepers from Bahr el Ghazal. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thank you for allowing us into your vehicles and homes. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.